evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, July 30, 2014. The peace talks are delayed by one day over who will be included in the talks, but government says it has no problem inviting more people to the table.
As the government, we don't care as to who participates and who does what. What we want is peace. If increasing the numbers of the participants and so forth or the stakeholders will bring peace, so be it.
And what does Rebecca Nyandeng have to say on this matters day?
Now, for the people of South Sudan, it's a very big turbulence for them. And they remember Dr. John many times, especially from the 15th of December. They remember him a lot. So it's a very sad time for everybody.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Thousands gathered at the John Garang Mausoleum in Juba to celebrate the country's annual Matters Day today. The event is held each year to remember the sacrifices made by more than 2 million people who have died beginning in 1955 in the struggle for South Sudan's independence. Matters Day began on this day 8 years ago, 1 year after the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, or AMI founder Dr. John Garang, was killed in a helicopter crash. We have several reports for you, beginning in Juba. President Kiir presided over the celebration in the nation's capital and had this to say about Matters Day. This occasion reminds us the brothers and sisters who died in the struggle. And all of you know very well. Nobody did not lose a relative. Just like what the defense minister said. And there is no tribe from all the tribes of South Sudan that did not lose a relative. So we should all remember this day, because this is the day where we lost the commander, Dr. John Garang de Mabior. That was President Salva Kiir speaking in Arabic in Juba. In Bor, Jonglei State Governor John Kong Nyon says it's important for the government to reach out and help those whose lives have been forever changed by the struggle for freedom.
We must also support our widows, orphans and disabled, compatriots in our communities. This is the only way to help them feel that their loved one did not die in vain. It wasn't their wish to be disabled, widows or orphans, but for our freedom, as we are free at last, they became. And I take this opportunity to appeal to our national government to continue and double its effort in supporting these groups in these hard times.
Meanwhile, rebel leader Riek Machar read a statement from the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa, where he called on South Sudanese to remember those who sacrificed their lives for the independence of South Sudan.
The people of South Sudan are commemorating this Matters Day and the ninth anniversary of tragic death of Dr. John Garang de Mabior, chairman and commander-in-chief of SPLM-SPLA and first vice president of the Republic of Sudan, and president of the government of Southern Sudan. In the midst of 7 months civil war, we salute the memory of our martyrs and all those who have laid down their lives for the freedom and independence of South Sudan. Secondly, the country is in a state of civil war consequence to the dictatorship erected by President Salva Kiir Mayardit. We recall how in mid-2012, the grassroots of the SPLM-SPLA cried out against loss of vision and direction in the country as a result of poor leadership provided by Salva Kiir Mayardit. Our people sense the consummation of the CPA in 2005 have been yearning for a democratic, peaceful, just, and prosperous South Sudan, in which human rights and dignity of the people are respected and upheld. These are the ideals for which our people fought and sacrificed the dear lives of their sons and daughters. It is therefore out of respect for our martyrs and their sacrifices that I call on all of us together to stand up and honor their memory by reviving the vision of the SPLM-SPLA. We in the SPLM-SPLA, the resistance movement, join other people in marking this Martyrs' Day with thanksgiving to God Almighty for giving us these heroes and heroines. As we celebrate, we stand up with our heads raised in pride for sacrifices they made for the freedom of our nation. We also salute their families and the people of South Sudan in this day. Their heroism shall be remembered forever in our nation.
That's rebel leader Riek Machar reading a statement from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. John Garang's widow, Rebecca Nyandeng, says this day is a painful reminder of the struggle her late husband went through during Sudan's civil war. She says she could not join the rest of the South Sudanese citizens marking this day in Juba because of previous threats to her family by security officials.
It's a very sad day for us, of course, as a family, and especially now for the people of South Sudan. It's a very big turbulence for them. They remember Dr. John many times, especially from the 15th of December. They remember him a lot. So it's a very sad time for everybody.
Well, you have been speaking to the two leaders, that is President Salva Kiir and Dr. Riek Machar, and you continue to speak to them. On this day today of the Martyrs' Day, as the country remembers those who laid down their lives for the freedom that is there in South Sudan, what message would you want to give them at this moment, if you have any?
If I were two of them, I would remember this day to be the day of peace. They should be giving people of South Sudan peace for this day, because, you know, people of South Sudan are yearning for peace. If they know that Dr. John was the leader, and he was their leader, and they remember this day, and they remember people of South Sudan, they would give this day a very special attention for the people of South Sudan. But I don't know what do they have in their mind. Dr. Riek has put a message for this day into social media, remembering about Dr. John and the people who perished.
And Madam Rebecca, what are your plans for this country? Because a lot of people are wondering why you are silent. You are not part of the peace negotiation. You are no longer in Juba. You are in Nairobi. What are your plans for this country?
I did not go to negotiation in Addis Ababa because I'm the mother. I'm the mother of everybody. I don't want to go and argue with people on the table when there are people who could do that. So there are enough people in the South who can talk on our behalf. And I'm not in Juba because when I was in Juba, my house was shattered, and even the troops came to my house. Looking for my son and threatening me and things like that. And I reported it to the authorities. If I go to Juba, I will not be secure. And the way I'm talking, informing the world, like you are calling me now, I would have not been called if I were in Juba. I would not be able to tell the world what is happening. So Juba is a place where the media are not having freedom. There is no freedom of media, freedom of expression. So you see, it's a country that people cannot dream, even if you dream. Somebody said that they wanted to come and interpret your dream for you, and you are the one who dreamt.
And with all this happening, do you see a light at the end of the tunnel?
As a believer, you cannot lose hope. Hope is the light of everything. And if I say that I'm optimistic, it will be an understatement, but hope is everything. So I, myself, and the people of South Sudan have very high hope. God is on our side.
That's Rebecca Nyandeng, who is John Garang's widow. She spoke to me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, this past hour. New peace talks between Sudan's warring parties have been delayed by at least a day as the two sides prepare for another round of negotiations in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. VOA's Gabe Joslo reports that hopes for a lasting peace are pinned to the process, which has repeatedly failed to end 7 months of fighting.
The talks between South Sudan's government and the rebel opposition were scheduled to resume Wednesday in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. South Sudan government spokesman Michael Makwe Lueth says negotiators just back to work after the Eid holiday break needed more time to prepare for the talks, but he says they do expect to have a team ready in the coming days. The negotiations were initially due to resume last month, but were delayed because of opposition demands that civil society and diaspora groups be allowed to take part as stakeholders. Lueth says the government has no issue with those demands.
For us as the government, we don't care as to who participates and who does what. What we want is peace. So if increasing the numbers of the participants and so forth or the stakeholders will bring peace, so be it.
Two spokesmen for the opposition also confirmed the talks had been delayed at the government's request, but that their side is ready to resume negotiations when called. Tens of thousands of people have been killed in South Sudan since a political conflict between President Salva Kiir and his main rival Riek Machar descended into inter-ethnic violence in December. The two sides have agreed to three separate ceasefire agreements in talks organized by the East African Group of Nations, IGAD, but all of the deals have been violated soon after signing. David Deng, research director for the South Sudan Law Society, says there is measured optimism about these talks, despite their failure to produce a lasting deal so far.
So I think people are sober in terms of how they assess the possibilities for peace coming out of the process, but at the same time hopeful, and I think aware that there's no other game in town, and there's a lot riding on this process.
An agreement in June called for a transitional government that was to be established by the second week of August, but because of delays to the negotiations and continued fighting, that deadline is unlikely to be met. Deng says in order for the two sides to move towards substantive matters of reconciliation, there must first be a lasting ceasefire.
A very important thing to watch out for is the sort of responses of the groups on the ground in the coming days and weeks. And if we can see them, you know, to hold off in terms of aggressive action towards one another, hopefully that can leave enough room for parties then to begin engaging on some of these political questions moving forward.
According to the United Nations, more than 1 million South Sudanese have been displaced by violence since the conflict began, while aid agencies have warned that some parts of the country are at risk of falling into famine. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Nairobi.
The proposed transitional government that President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar agreed in June to set up is expected to be high on the agenda at the peace talks. But opposition political parties taking part in the talks are divided over what form of the transitional government should take. Some want it to be led by president and a prime minister selected from the warring sides. But parties allied to the government want elected institutions and Mr. Kiir and the democratically elected president to stay in power until the next election. Charlton Doki has this report from Juba.
Last week, 18 of South Sudan's 23 opposition parties agreed to set up a common position on how the transitional government should be structured when they take part in the peace talks in Addis Ababa. They drafted a position paper for IGAD mediators in which they call for, among other things, the interim vice president to be selected from a pool of opposition party members. They also want to abolish the Council of States, the Chamber of Parliament that legislates on matters affecting states, and want the number of government ministries reduced to 21 from 27. But five other parties rejected that line and have allied themselves with the government, particularly on the issue of who should be in the proposed transitional government. James Aniseto Batikayo, leader of the National Democratic Forum, says the 18 opposition parties are looking out for themselves. The five pro-government parties decided they needed to set up their smaller alliance.
To clarify the fact so that those who fish in troubled waters and care only about their immediate benefits do not confuse the public.
Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomuro is head of the Democratic Forum Party, one of the five pro-government parties. He says the five parties insist on some points, including
the elected president and the elected institutions have to continue till the time for elections, but anything else should be negotiable.
Lomuro says some of the opposition political parties are not constitutional and should not be allowed to take part in the peace talks.
From the analysis we conducted, it became clear, and with reference to the past, we know that there are only 16 registered political parties in the Republic of South Sudan. Out of these 16, some of them have divided themselves into several factions. And those which divided themselves, some of them have been claimed by individuals, and yet they have not held a conference, a national conference, to legitimize themselves as chairpersons of the factions. And so, with regards to the Constitution and the law, the Political Parties Act, these fractions are illegal.
Abraham Awolich, a policy analyst at Juba-based think tank, the SAD Institute, says divisions among opposition political parties do not bode well for the peace talks and will affect South Sudan's political scene.
It means that the SPLM will continue to dominate the political space, which is not good necessarily for the democratic aspiration of the country. As we have seen in the last few years, where the parliament, the executive, and even the judiciary, they do one thing, and there is no balance, checks and balance in the government, simply because it is one party.
President Kiir and Mr. Machar agreed to set up a transitional government within 60 days from June 10th, but have not held any talks on the issue since the peace talks stalled last month. The deadline for setting up an interim government runs out early next month. This story was prepared by Wake Simon Wudu in Juba. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
South Sudan's information minister is calling on representatives of the rebels at the talks to negotiate in good faith and ensure that peace is restored to the country. Michael Makui tells reporter Peter Clody the rebels have yet to make any concession since the two sides began negotiating months ago.
This call came as a result of the last visit of the envoys to South Sudan, in which they informed the government that the talks will resume on the 31st of July. And the last adjournment came as a result of the boycott of the talks by the rebels. So bearing that in mind, we call upon the rebels to enter the next peace talks, the next phase in good faith, so that we bring peace to our people and so. So this is because the rebels, up to now, their position is not clear. Last time they boycotted the talks because they did not want to sit with all the stakeholders on the same table. They demanded that the government should only sit with the rebels and the stakeholders should be consultants at the lobbies. This was against the provisions of the protocols and the agreement of the communiques and the agreement which was reached on the 9th May 2014. This is why we call upon the rebels to enter this coming phase, talk in good faith, so that we bring peace to the people of South Sudan.
The rebels have called for the withdrawal of Ugandan troops because they think that the Ugandan troops have taken sides supporting the government in the conflict. Why is your government refusing to adhere to their demand as part of the effort to resolve this conflict once and for all?
These are issues of sovereignty and they are not in question. They are unquestionable. There is nowhere in the world where the rebel group will dictate the government and say that this should be done so that we do this. This is out of question, number one. The government have made so many concessions to the extent that we have almost reached a stage of saturation whereby we will not be in a position to give any further concession. The rebels have never conceded in any way. But the government had been conceding all this time up to the last minute. So there is no way issues of sovereignty can be compromised.
You say the issue of sovereignty cannot be compromised. But if you reach the saturation point, then what happens?
What happens is that it is up to the rebels. This time it is for the international community to press on the rebels to ensure that they also concede on their demand.
So far, what would you say has been the expectations of your government ahead of these talks in Addis Ababa?
Well, our expectation is that we expect the rebels to come to their senses so that we stop this killing, we stop these violations which they have been constantly doing, so that we bring peace to our people, so that our people live in peace and harmony.
That's South Sudan's Information Minister, Michael Makuye, in Juba, speaking to reporter Peter Clody.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Safe disposal of household garbage is important to protect everyone's health. Flies, rats, and other dangerous scavengers are attracted to trash piles. Rainwater can pool there and breed insects that spread diseases like malaria. Other dangers can develop too. To prevent this, proper disposal of garbage is very important. Do not burn anything plastic, since that can foul the air. Clean, keep, and store plastics, as well as other items that can be reused. For other solid waste, talk with others and pick a site for a communal pit. Make layers of trash and soil until it is filled. Then mark the area so people don't try and use it for another purpose.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we have more news for you on the Young African Leaders Initiative here in Washington. That story is coming up.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is it important to encourage people to buy locally produced goods? Why or why not?
It's important to encourage people to buy locally produced goods because that creates jobs for the local people.
If they meet the quality threshold, then definitely I would encourage them to buy locally, because it has a ripple effect on providing for locals and families and jobs and ancillary services and what have you.
Yes, that's promoting our market and promoting our income. Before we go to external or the imports, we have to promote our local goods. Now, by so doing, we'll be making our market bigger.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Hundreds of young African leaders are wrapping up a 3-day Young African Leaders Initiative, or YALI, in Washington today. The young leaders met with the creator of the YALI Fellowship, President Barack Obama, earlier this week. Atlas fellow Nabil Biagio spoke with a YALI alumnus from Sudan who was one of the first participants in the program back in 2010.
U.S. President explained why YALI was created when he met with the 500 young African leaders on Monday.
The objective was to give young Africans the opportunity to come to the United States and develop their skills as the next generation of leaders in civil society, and business, and government.
Mr. Obama told the YALI fellows that he is impressed with the large number of applicants for the program this year and for the passion they show for learning to be leaders.
One young woman from rural Zimbabwe took a 5-hour bus ride, then another 6-hour bus ride, then another 7-hour bus ride, a 2-day journey just to get her interview.
Ahmed Essanosi took part in the fellowship 4 years ago when it was launched. He says the YALI program does not end when the last speech has been given in Washington.
Wherever I go and whenever I go to each African country, I know someone there because I met him or her in 2010 in Washington, D.C. And we are always connected. We share experiences, we share challenges and the ways to overcome these challenges.
Essanosi says YALI training is tailored to meet the needs of different participants. The theme that was highlighted in the workshops he attended was governance, he says.
We knew more about how the U.S. government works. We had several workshops, and actually they connected the Africans with each other in Washington using the modern methods and good experiences the U.S. government has in these programs. So it was a very useful program. I wish I could go back again.
He says the YALI program was a precious opportunity for him because in Sudan, young people have no say in public affairs. As-Sanusi was 22 years old when he took part in the program in 2010. At the time, he was working as a reporter for the Citizen Daily newspaper in Khartoum. After his participation in the YALI program, As-Sanusi went on to become a Khartoum-based radio stringer with Voice of America. He covered stories from Sudan for 2 years before moving on to his current job in the Office of Public Affairs and Media at the U.S. Embassy in Khartoum. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. After days of fighting, Islamist groups in Libya have seized the headquarters of the Libyan Special Forces in the eastern city of Benghazi. An Islamist and jihadist alliance called the Benghazi Revolutionaries Shura Council announced the capture of the main military base in the eastern city in a statement today. A Libyan army official has also confirmed the takeover. Israel has called a brief humanitarian ceasefire after Israeli tank shells struck a UN-run school in the Gaza Strip, killing at least 15 people. The planned four-hour halt in fighting began at 3 p.m. local time. Today's school attack was at the Jebeliya refugee camp, which houses Palestinians in northern Gaza. And finally, international observers in eastern Ukraine have turned back from the crash site of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 after pro-Russian separatists once again prevented them from entering the area. European officials say after talks with the rebels at the site, the observers from the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe return to their base in the city of Donetsk. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday on South Sudan's Matters Day. We now leave you with the song Alamis Sudan by former child soldier Mo Attack Mo. Alamis Sudan Kawewa Alamis Delegeyana Alamis Sudan Kawewa Alamis Delegeyana Sudan Kawewa Alama Zelegeyanda Alama Sora Kawewa Alama Zelegeyanda Sudan Kawewa Alama Zelegeyanda Alama Sora Kawewa Alama Zelegeyanda Alama Zelegeyanda. We have been listening to Mo Attack Mo with that song Alama Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. It's good to have you here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.